you don't already follow Heather Sharone on social media, you need to. She is one of the best tweeters I know in terms of information, fun facts, and all that stuff. She covers city stuff. News for WTTW. And Heather, I saw a couple of posts today. Very, very interesting stuff. One of them talking about how Dr. Allison Arwady and Dr. Ngozi Ezike, thank you, will be throwing out first pitches at the home opener tomorrow. That's pretty cool stuff.
That is, and I should credit the reporting from The Athletic for that fact. And they have really been the faces of this pandemic. And at one point, Dr. Ezike was briefing reporters every day at 2:30 p.m. And I know that I waited with bated breath every day to hear, okay, you know, what's next and where are we going?
Right. How about it? The journey they've taken us on over this year. And both of them I'm not such knowledgeable people, but very, very compassionate and empathetic people, too. That always came through to me, and that struck a chord. As I listened to them, you could feel the pain in their voices as they worried about citizens, right? I felt that for sure.
Absolutely. Dr. Ezike in particular tried to, whenever she was announcing the death tolls, which, you know, soared into the hundreds, would always take a moment to, you know, remind people that these were people who were loved, who had families, who had children, who had sisters, who had brothers. And I think, you know, I certainly tried to keep that in mind as I sort of waded through what was at times sort of a crush of data.
Right, right. It seemed like on some days it seemed like numbers. And then you were reminded, wait a minute, let's step back from this. And I just felt good to have both of them there. I really did. That if you needed someone to deliver this type of news, it was knowledgeable doctors like both of them who also were very human and compassionate. Hey, the other thing you mentioned too is another powerful moment that might have missed if you weren't following Heather Sharone at Heather Sharone on Twitter. it was that the second longest serving alderman on the city council, Alderman Kerry Austin, was growing emotional at the opening of the new fire station. I heard all about that new fire station on the far south side. I think the mayor's out at the unveiling today. But apparently you point out that she was hospitalized last year with COVID and that Engine Company 115 saved her life. Wow.
Yes. And she was very, very ill, and she has suffered a number of health problems and was absent from the city council for many months at the height of the pandemic while she worked to recover. She also mentioned that fire engine, which has a new station, also was called to respond when her husband, Lemuel Austin, who also was an alderman for the 34th Ward, suffered what turned out to be a fatal heart attack. So it was really, I think, almost a capstone moment of her career to be able to open that fire station for a group of firefighters who had meant so much to her family in particular. She has been on the council and active in Chicago politics longer than anybody other than Ed Burke, which means she has, you know, seen a lot. And I think a lot of people are waiting to see whether she runs again in 2023.
Heather, you may know this. Help me out. Do we call the female members of city council alderwomen, or do we call them aldermen or alderpersons? Please help.
So the official title in state law is alderman, regardless of the gender of the person holding that seat. And there is a move spearheaded by Alderman Andre Vasquez to change the formal title to alder to make it gender neutral. And that wouldn't be unprecedented. Committee man used to be the title of the Democratic and Republican leaders in each ward. And that title was officially changed just about a year or so ago to committee person. So there's definitely precedent for it. It would take a change in state law. It wouldn't be something that the city council could do on its own, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you feel about it.
How about that? So it's the way it is. Alderman is the way it is until they change it to alder. And that's going to sound weird initially because Alder Kerry Austin, Alder Ed Burke, I mean, that's going to sound, but I understand we're going there. When would that be?
Oh, you know, it's hard to tell. You know, state law changes either really fast or glacially slow. And what is pending in the city council, although it was blocked from advancing, is just a resolution sort of calling on state officials to do this to reflect the sense of the city council. But there are going to be costs involved, of course, because everybody's got official stationery, they've got signs. They've got all sorts of things. So there will be, you know, no doubt criticism that this is an expense that the city just shouldn't choose to shoulder at a time when everybody is really still struggling to recover from the pandemic.
Can't you just cross it out, the man part? I mean, I don't know. I'm not an idea person. right. I wonder if that was an Illinois product, the whiteout. I don't know. We should think about these things, Heather, and I know you're on it. Thank you for that very, very thorough explanation. I did not know that. Wow, the stuff you learn. Hey, I do want, you have been following the COVID situation, and the numbers are ticking up, and they're saying it's among young people and even certain neighborhoods even they've pinpointed. I know the North and Northwest side, they're seeing bigger jumps there. The rhetoric's coming up, too. I heard the mayor today call it a quantum leap from where we were a week ago to where we are today.
Yes. It's very, very serious. The last time we saw data like this was in mid-October, which was really the start of the second surge of the pandemic, which at its peak claimed the lives of 25 Chicagoans every day. So this is, you know, not something that can be sort of ignored or trifled with. Right now, the city's test positivity is 4.5%. That is more than a full percentage point up in the past week. And you're right, the increase is centered in neighborhoods like Lincoln Park and Old Town and Jefferson Park and Portage Park. And it's really because some people have decided that the pandemic is over. Perhaps they've been partially vaccinated. Perhaps they're just really tired of this whole thing, and they're not wearing masks. And they're going out with friends. They're going to bars. They're going to restaurants. They're playing sports. And they're not keeping their mask on and they're not maintaining social distancing. And the city will again have to consider whether to impose new restrictions, even as they work to vaccinate as many people as possible.
It's not the direction we want to see things. And I think anytime you see something move sort of dramatically in the direction of up, it's concerning. And we'll have to see. We had Dr. Copen on from Northwestern Medicine yesterday, and his belief is that we won't necessarily see another wave because of the vaccinations. Why take chances with this stuff, right? We don't want to see that. And this is where we are. So we'll continue to monitor it, and I know you will too at TTW. The other big story I know you are covering, I want to make sure we just have a few minutes to get to this, Heather, but is it an inspector general or who just issued a report, a city watchdog essentially, about the Chicago Police Department, that gang database we've heard so much about, that it's unfair and that it's racially discriminatory, but they're saying that this is, they're really not doing a good job to replace it since we identified all the problems with this database. What have you learned there?
Right. Well, 2 years ago, Inspector General Joe Ferguson came out with an audit that found that basically that this database was ripe for abuse, filled with errors, and disproportionately targeted Black and Latino Chicagoans who then found themselves at risk of being deported or not getting a job or not getting some sort of professional license that they had provided for. And he really recommended that the city council and the mayor immediately scrap the database and start fresh. But that was 2 years ago, and basically nothing has happened since then, we learned from this audit today. And not only have they not created a new database, the police department continues to use the old database that they've acknowledged is filled with all of those problems, which I think sets up a real, you know, situation of concern for people who are listed in that database, either erroneously or they are no longer gang affiliated and could really face some severe consequences. Mayor Lightfoot campaigned on ending the current form of the database back in 2019 when she was running for mayor. So we've asked her why more hasn't been done and why police officers are continuing to use this faulty information, but she has not responded to our request for comment.
It'll be interesting to see what happens there. I know when you talk to police officers, they say they have found parts and portions of the database to be helpful. It's helpful to know if there are gang affiliations, if there are identifiable tattoos and things like that for people with known histories of crime or linked together. I think the problem we found is there are people on that who didn't belong on it, and that would haunt them in their lives. And you can't get off it very easily. It's very difficult to get what, expunged? Don't you have to go through like a legal process in order to get it off there?
Well, there was no process to be removed from the database under the original setup, which was also a problem because we all know that, you know, police officers are human. They make mistakes. We all make mistakes. But if somebody was listed wrongly as a gang member, there was no sort of appeal process. And all of the plans for the new system say that that will be in place. But advocates are concerned that that process could be onerous and it would perhaps not be accessible enough for those who perhaps don't speak English as a first language or who are otherwise have trouble sort of accessing official services.
Okay, what was it? Where was it a problem when they tried to apply for housing? I know for gun permits and things like that, people were rejected. But where else was it popping up and causing problems for people who had erroneous information or were on the database, in the database, entirely wrongly?
Well, I think the biggest concern was that under the Trump administration, there was concern that Immigration and Customs Enforcement was going to use this information to launch an effort to deport as many undocumented immigrants as possible. And it seems a lifetime ago, but actually at the sort of the height of the former president's attempts to increase deportations, the mayor actually cut off ICE's access to this database, saying that she was concerned that it would be abused by the federal government. And there were lawsuits filed against the city from people who said that they were threatened with deportation because they were listed in this database and it was incorrect. So it had a really profound impact on their lives because in some cases they were jailed while awaiting their deportation proceedings to be completed.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Heather, are you covering any City Hall stuff today or where are you off to now?
Well, I am working on a story about Cook County, which is expanding eligibility for the vaccine to all essential workers, and they're opening the next block of appointments at 6 o'clock today, so people can go to the Cook County vaccination site to register and get ready to try to get those appointments. But cases, just like they're surging in Chicago, are surging in suburban Cook County, so officials are trying to vaccinate, as I said, as many people as quickly as possible.
Yep, it sounds good. Again, follow at Heather Sharone. Great information, as always. Thank you, Heather. Enjoy the rest of your day, okay?
You too.
We'll talk to you soon. At Heather Sharone. And Sharone, by the way, is C-H-E-R-O-N-E.